CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. The headlines in London Telegraph. Biden could send new longer-range ATACMS missiles to Ukraine. Subhead, powerful new long-range ballistic missiles complete with cluster bombs will reportedly form part of the aid package if passed. If passed is the big piece of the unknowns because the U.S. Congress has turned away from Ukraine in these last days. The death of Mr. Navalny has left many people puzzled as to what happens next in Ukraine. And European Union and NATO are part of the puzzlement. So is the Biden administration. There was talk of retaliating in some fashion, making Mr. Putin pay a price for the death of a man who was understood as a representative of democracy and freedom and dissent from the regime in Moscow. But now that he's gone, what is to be done about Europe and its defenses from Russian aggression? Gregory, we've talked of Ukraine so much. Now that we come to the ATACMS, it's another example of will a weapon system make a difference? It hasn't so far. So I wanted to approach this story from the point of view of what's new about Putin. 2006, that would have been the death of Litvinenko by poisoning in London. 2015, that would be the death of Nemtsov, the dissenter on a bridge over the Moskva River. 2018, that would have been the attack on the Skripals. And 2020, the original episode attempting to kill Mr. Navalny on a flight from Siberia. And now the death of Navalny. The pattern is in place. There's nothing new. Putin's been an assassin since the beginning of this century and perhaps before, the way he treated the Chechen revolt. So because there's nothing new here, because of the Ukraine invasion of 2014 and the Ukraine invasion of 2022 are part of an assassin's portfolio, has something changed with Navalny, or is it just business as usual?
The only thing that's changed with Navalny is that it's reinforced the international opinions against Putin and the Russian government. The Russian government, I think, has certainly engaged in selective assassinations, but tell me which major government has not. Certainly the Chinese government does it, and the United States government has done it. It's selectively targeted its opponents abroad and killed them. And it's also been the case where there have been a number of unexplained deaths in the United States. So I think what we need to do is to get back and say, what does this mean in the strategic sense? I would suggest that although Navalny was an opponent of Putin and had lots of support, but particularly support in the international community, that his death was something which President Putin would have probably found very, very annoying at this time. I don't think they deliberately decided to get rid of him at this time. The fact that he died in prison, I think, is really annoying to the government because it distracts from the situation. But the protests in Russia have been fairly small in comparison with what you would expect because the Russian government is still overwhelmingly popular. So, and I think what we're starting to see, and particularly since the visit by Tucker Carlson, the U.S. Television reporter, to interview President Putin, that we're starting to see a little more nuance in international reporting on the Russian political situation. We've kept hearing for the past two to three years, particularly out of Washington, that Putin is nothing but an insane killer, that his health is failing, that they're losing the war, and so on. The reality has been quite the reverse. We see that Russia has maintained its position, has maintained its original objectives in the Ukraine war. It's likely to see, as we've discussed since February 2022, the situation where it will keep the Donbass region and Crimea and the linking parts there, control the Sea of Azov, which is what these were the objectives that Moscow wanted, and that's what it's likely to end up with. And the West keeps that thinking that if they throw money and new weapons at the situation, that will somehow change. And money and technology have never been a viable substitute for strategy. This was never approached from a strategic or realistic point of view. Providing TACMs, the long-range ballistic missiles with the, as you say, the multiple warheads, is not going to change the outcome of this conflict. But what it could do is broaden the conflict. And I don't think Washington, anyone, including the Biden administration in Washington, wants to escalate the point where it's seen that the United States has provided Ukraine with the means of long-range attacks into Russia. And I think we've seen in the past that the Biden administration has attempted to constrain Ukrainians from using U.S. weapons to go beyond the borders of Ukraine. And I'm sure they would try to do that again. And even the Ukrainian military has been has become very, very reluctant to continue to accept casualties, to the point where in the middle of this conflict, or the ending stage of this conflict, if you want to say, President Zelensky has replaced most of the senior leadership of his military within the past couple of weeks. He's got a new commander-in-chief, he's got a new commander of the army, a new commander of the airborne attack corps, a new head of joint operations, and so on. He's basically, and new head of territorial defense. So he's basically trying to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic after it's hit the iceberg. And at some point, it's been made clear by the military and by some of the political leaders around Western Ukraine that they will basically remove Zelensky if this goes on much longer. So basically, Zelensky is trying to find a solution which gives him an out, and I don't think he's going to find it the way that it's going now.
Watching these events is the European Union and NATO. Mr. Borrell, the foreign minister of the EU, if there is such a post, has said, enough talk, do something. What is Europe's capability of doing something? Germany, France, Italy, and the UK would have been the four founding models. There have been suggestions that they should each commit themselves to forming several divisions and make up a European version of NATO in the event that the U.S. turns away continually. Does that sound practical, something that Europe can do?
Again, it lacks a strategy. It's a knee-jerk reaction. Certainly, some of the NATO countries, either separately or together, particularly Britain and France, have the capability to hold the line against a fairly limited Russian military capability. But the question is, what's the war about? Do you resolve the situation in a manner which enables you to rebuild your societies? Europe, under the European Union, has been going through massive disruption and fragmentation. It's being disrupted by very, very poor economic and ecological decisions, which have impacted the strategic capabilities of the whole of Western Europe. So, for Western Europe, under the European Union and Mr. Borrell's very, very ill-informed basis, is going to take years to remedy. Yes, you've had the basis of a Euro Corps, a combined corps of French, German, and other troops within continental Europe to be able to operate together, but then still not even in the range of the former NATO capabilities which existed until 1989. So basically, Europe has to start addressing really how they want to see the future, and do they see a future with the European Union involved in the European Union? Because frankly, the Ukraine has consistently ranked as the most corrupt country in the world, much more corrupt than Russia. So the question is, do you want that country to come into the European Union, and how, in fact, could it qualify to enter the European Union when countries such as Turkey, which was much more advanced in its economic development, be refused entry into the EU?
There is also the organization NATO, and the question of NATO's divisions continue. The Poland and the Baltics, the new NATO members, are quite keen on building up a European army. The others, the older NATO, are hesitant about their economy, about their prosperity. Is there a significance to that dispute? Are we looking at a division in Europe that isn't that cannot be solved?
I think it's certainly not on the way to resolution. We've got some European Union leaders, like Donald Tusk in Poland, advocating for a European army and advocating for increased support for Ukraine. But his predecessor government was absolutely opposed to both of those suggestions.
Right.
It was a firm NATO member, but Donald Tusk has taken it into this very radical situation. And that's despite the fact that Ukraine has traditionally been hostile to Poland as much as it has been to Russia.
So what we have here is the status quo right now is likely to continue for some time. Ukraine may or may not negotiate. Ukraine may or may not be a rump. But the rest of the European Union and of NATO, they're not exactly the same. There are 27 states, I believe, in the European Union, many more than that in NATO. They're likely to remain not building an army, but at the same time opposed to Russia. Is that the indefinite future?
Well, I don't think it's the indefinite future. I think that the opposition to Russia has become very, very selective. So some of the European countries are saying, hang on, let's get a situation where we can resume trade with Russia. And some of the NATO countries are involved in that as well. So the NATO itself as an organization under the Secretary General there has been trying to find a new mission for itself. And it doesn't have one absent the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Treaty Organization states. And what they attempted to do, particularly under the current Secretary General of NATO, is to resurrect Russia as though it were the Soviet Union, which it patently is not. It's not necessarily at one with the West in terms of its forms of governance or its objectives, but it certainly is not the Soviet Union. And this is not the same as the Cold War situation, which gave rise to NATO. So basically, we don't have an organized situation. NATO has become essentially a meaningless organization, particularly with the great Atlantic divide,
right,
and particularly since Britain left the European Union.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We turn to the King Charles Report, my favorite of the week. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.